shorter because I need to eat lunch.
What time do I need to get you out by?
We could do like, I feel like we could get this within 25 maybe or less minutes. Works for me.
3:40, I'll have you done.
Perfect. I want to keep it short and simple to keep people's imaginations interested on this and whatever. So it should be good.
You always keep our imaginations. Hi, we've had technical difficulties because we're talking about data centers. So big data is censoring us. That's what happened. No, I'm kidding. We had a little problem with the Substack Live. Sorry, folks. It's what happens when you do live. Look, we both do TV. We do live radio. This stuff happens. I'm going to dump it back in the Substack. We'll put it on YouTube, all the podcasting platforms. But notwithstanding, welcome to Herd Tell. Thank you for giving us the most precious thing you have, your time, especially if you were waiting for the live feed that never came. So we'll call this the Godot podcast. Gabby Hoffman, so great to talk to you again, my friend. How are you?
It's wonderful to catch up, Andrew. I am loving your eclair adventures and your baking and cooking adventures. It's so nice to see.
Now I got to put it in the notes and I have an excuse to talk cooking because we are there. Gabriella Hoffman, Independent Women's Center. Look, I'm biased. I'm a girl's dad. Anytime you got a top policy shop with a whole lot of high-end women.
My dad is a girl dad. Thrilled.
Sarah, a couple of our other friends there. You guys do great work. She has a fancy title now. She is the director for the energy and conservation section of IWF. That sounds important.
Yeah. No, I do have that title. I've had that title, goodness, now for this November will be 3 years.
Wow.
But we first crossed paths when I was at Young Voices. You were at Young Voices. And that was a great time, and I was able to bring over Sarah Montalbano. Now she's a senior fellow with me at my center. We love Sarah, of course.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been exciting, and Sarah has actually helped me crunch a lot of the stuff about data centers. She's been doing a lot of commentary and even testifying about reforms to make electricity markets more market-friendly involving data centers. There's a reform called consumer-regulated electricity that a lot of us are in support of, and if you do it, it's like an off-grid system, like alternative to compete with existing utility markets, and it's going to lower prices. It's bring your own capacity, which we can go into detail more.
Yeah.
But Sarah has had her pulse on some exciting stuff. She helps supplement a lot of what I do, and she does her own things too with her main gig. But she is an extra fellow with us now with that. So no, Young Voices is a great platform for listeners who are not familiar, who have not gone through the program. Shameless plug, you got to do it. I know it's changed a little bit since we've done it. It's a slightly different focus, I think, since I was a regional leader and contributor with them. But we love Casey and the folks over there. They do great, phenomenal work.
They do. And I was too old in the first place, and they slid me in anyway. Now I'm officially too old because I'm going to have my first grandchild here in September.
So, congratulations.
And what's great about it is almost all of them are doing great. Like almost all of those people are doing it. Not all of them stayed in politics and stuff.
Right.
Some of them moved on to other things, but all of them are really. I just had Jack Rallet on, who was a UK Young Voices guy. I just had him on Monday. Let's start there. That was a great introduction on why we should have had Sarah instead of the two of us talking about this. We'll get you, Sarah, I promise. I want to start here because here's where I'm at on this, and this is even what I titled it. I was like, I think the people just pitching this as the great boom that's going to fix all problems humanity's ever had. I think that's wrong. I think the doom and gloom stuff's wrong. I actually think, and because you and I kind of really connected on the conservation stuff even more than the political stuff, I actually think conservation is a good way to look at data centers because it goes to kind of my core, and is like, there's no such thing as any industry that does not have resource strain. I think you're going to have resource strain no matter what. How do you keep it from being an extraction industry? How do you keep it to be fair to the people involved that aren't going to be directly linked, but they're directly affected? How do you have good policy? If you're doing doom and you're doing boom, you're not doing good policy because good policy is going to be in the middle of those two. But everybody's incentive right now is to talk about the boom, we're going to make all this money and change the world, or all the doom of it's going to ruin everything forever of all time. It's going to be Chernobyl all over the place. Neither are true. We got to get to the middle to get to the policy part of this, right?
I agree. Absolutely, Andrew, because to me, I'm center defender, and I don't want to be. But, you know, people on the outside are having to do a little cleanup for some of these, you know, tech companies, because you see some representatives, not any company that I have interacted with, but some people from the outside, maybe these like secondary or tertiary organizations, the executives have said, well, AI is going to take every single job. You just have to prepare for it. And I was like, who is feeding this individual, this executive talking points? And the goal is not to replace jobs. The goal is to supplement existing jobs and create more enhanced professions using AI tools, because as everyone knows, AI is undergirded and supported by human input. You can never take away human input. It will never be autonomous. To keep things simple about AI, there's like four stages of AI. I think we're at stage two of four, and generative AI and some other variants of AI. And so we'll never hit criticality of where AI replaces humans, because like anything, humans still have free will, even in this AI boom and doom that we are seeing. And that is what has to be reinforced. And so even if you have the, let's say, this proliferation of AI, I don't think you're going to lose that human touch or that human quality, because you still have to be human to do a lot of professions. Baking is never going to be replaced by robots. Public policy is never going to be replaced by AI robots or some sort of replacement or humanoid, because it still requires human interaction. I have to go around the country to talk to people. I will go to DC. I'll sometimes go out of state to meet with people, to network, to share ideas, to keynote address, to do this. An AI variant of me cannot replace me. And same, you know, with people in baking or different professions, construction. But what AI can do is, first off, it's going to store, let's say data centers are going to be storing a lot of the outputs that we do. We've seen, let's say, with respect to data centers are not a novel concept. They're not new. They've been around since the 1940s. There is and I have a policy focus, Andrew, on this, which you can link back to after our correspondence today. And he actually printed out. Wonderful. I love it. Thank you, Andrew, for the nice little plug there. But online, it's readily available. So I'll explain kind of top of mind or kind of Cliff Notes version, top line items of what you can take away from that. And also just take away from AI in general. So data centers have been around for a long time, since the 1940s. There was a U.S. Army-backed project at the University of Pennsylvania, which gave birth to this first prototype of what a data center is. And then with cloud computation, the Y2K movement, and just general advancements in smartphones and better computers and more storage, they just have had to streamline. And with cloud computing, that is why you see this birth and dearth of data centers now proliferating. So I come to your listeners, Andrew, from Data Center Alley. I'm about an hour away, give or take, from Data Center Alley. But I believe there are a couple data centers in my corner of Northern Virginia too. But I live within an hour of Data Center Alley. And for me, it's not really been a negative thing. Like, granted, maybe some people closer to Data Center Alley have felt some of the environmental impacts of data centers, but they've been sited close to the freeway. Yes, they have built some residential housing nearby, but it was empty. There was really nothing there. It's part of this extension of this May East fiber optic network, in which 70% of global internet traffic travels through. So it's not surprising to see data centers here, but we've had them here as a case study in Virginia for a long, long time. And not until recently did you start to see maybe some slight uptick in prices and perhaps some concern. But there was no problem with buildup before. But because it's become a lightning rod issue, I would say with some climate activists, the people pushing the moratorium are the people who are very upset about losing renewable energy subsidies for their projects. That's a connection I want to make very clear as we're talking. So a lot of it is out of bitter competition that the preferred technology that we were told is going to save us and be this kind of saving grace, not working. AI data centers in particular, data centers in general, even those not powered by AI, they are resource intensive. Like you were saying, Andrew, I loved how you phrased it, resource strain. Everything comes with resources in terms of strain with resources, and you have trade-offs. You have to weigh like what project is going to be the least draining, and impactful to me. And that is what is currently shaping out to be, which is why you've seen a resurgence of natural gas. Natural gas is not going anywhere. I think now we are starting to see a big embrace. You're starting to see nuclear get bipartisan approval. A poll just came out today from Gallup that showed increased support for nuclear. It's something that both Republicans, Democrats, and even centrists, people in the middle of the road, support. They see that as like a good middle ground because it's very reliable, abundant. Fusion, much like fission, is actually quite revolutionary and very cutting edge and doesn't need all the transmission and infrastructure you find in fission plants. But fission plants are great. I like fusion plants. I think there's a promising future with them. Geothermal is also being tapped into, even though they exist in smaller pockets in the U.S. So AI boom has coincided with rising electricity demand. I want to get to this because this is where the crux of all of this with my policy work comes in. All of us in policy, especially in energy and conservation issues, have been asked, how do we respond to this? What's the challenge? Why are we seeing these two factors coincide? And like I said, if it wasn't going to be AI data center, this is what I talk about frequently and what I'm trying to communicate now more often. If it wasn't going to be data centers, it was going to be some sort of other event. I also think the Iran war has also shed light on, if you don't have smart energy policies, you're at the behest of adversary countries who are going to supply you energy that is more costly and less reliable and less efficient, less clean. And so the kind of disconnect you find here, similarly with kind of lopsided energy policy, thinking renewables only is going to get you this data center boom or this AI boom. We have seen actually the opposite is true, that you need to be supported by reliable, abundant, secure power, not only for data centers, but for lots of other industries. And if you don't have that, and you just have this, you know, ends justify the means kind of policy, like what net zero climate policies have dictated for the longest time, you are now starting to see a lot of people, blue state politicians in particular, walk back those agreements, walk back those policies very quietly, because the reality is, even, you know, whether it's AI determining it or data centers determining it, you know, as society becomes more prosperous, we're talking on Earth Day. I just saw a stat actually, and I tweeted it, from Human Progress, which is a project of the Cato Institute for the Simon Abundance Index. And we have now a growth of global population 85% from the 1950s. And we are now more resource abundant by 500 some odd percent. So we see a correlation, positive correlation, between more abundant resources against the contrast of a population boom globally. So we've seen a lot of those theories dispelled, that if you have more people, you're going to see more resource depletion. The opposite is true, because people now think and understand that you can have economic productivity while also being mindful of your surroundings. Like you said, the middle ground approach of boom versus doom. But all of these factors are coinciding. Data centers to me seem to be like a convenient scapegoat. And like I said, I'm not trying to be a endorser of it. They're not the most pleasant architecturally of structures, but whenever I drive by them, I understand why they're there. I saw a couple when I was coming from Western Maryland and Pennsylvania for a speech I was doing. So I saw a lot of them. They're around the major interstate coming from Pennsylvania to West Virginia through Maryland into Northern Virginia. You see kind of that alley there, because it's not very heavily populated. They have the optics, they have the reliable energy mix that can support this. So a lot goes into this. And I want to caution listeners of yours to, you know, not buy into the doom bit of it, because all the while they are popping up everywhere. There are thousands of them across the country. They can only be sited in areas with a fiber optic network, a reliable grid, and good weather conditions like water, soil, land, and such. So they can't be placed everywhere around the country. They're not going to be popping up like mushrooms to places, sensitive areas. They're also going to be...
Unless you're in Virginia.
Unless you're in Virginia, because we just have all the ripe qualities for this. But like I said, even with them here, for the longest time until last year, we have had protections against utility hikes. Because before Governor Youngkin, we had another governor, Governor Ralph Northam, who signed into law a very aggressive green mandate. Governor Youngkin was able to stall the implementation of that and slow that from proceeding. And it takes a couple of years for these very aggressive mandates to take place. So people started to notice their utility bills are going up. Why is it going up? Is it because of data centers? Is it because of this law finally coming into effect? What is going on? What I have seen in my initial research, it's data centers have a small influence on it. And a lot of the data center providers have promised that we are going to make sure that with rising electricity demand, we're not going to pass on the cost to consumers. That's a refrain that you keep hearing. So hopefully they will follow through with that pledge and ensure that that's the case. Many of them are opting, like I said earlier, to provide their own power capacity. So you're not going to see those costs passed on to the consumer. And I think people want to find a convenient scapegoat. Like this is related, Andrew, you probably saw that headline from the group American River saying the Potomac's the most endangered river in the United States, not only because of the spill, but because of data center runoff. And yes, that can be a concern, but my understanding is most of these data centers have like a closed loop recycling system. So you're not going to see runoff. And it would be, you can't go to the facility and be like, look at all that water that is seeping out and pouring out and like tainting with the sludge. That's not what's happening. Like a lot of these facilities are having to constantly innovate, and they're retrofitting themselves, from my understanding, to adopt these closed loop systems, even with their energy output. Like I said, if they're using more efficient, reliable sources like natural gas, coal, nuclear, you're not going to see them become as resource intensive. And funny enough, Andrew, the paradox with data centers is that the big hyperscalers that people don't like are actually the most efficient of all three major type of data center prototypes. And the bigger you have, the fewer of them you have to ultimately have in the long run. So you won't need to have as many pop up. But I think the paradox with this, going back to kind of big picture, is we are feeding the demand for data centers, whether you like it or not. If you are using your cell phone, a nice smartphone like I do, I just updated to the new iPhone 17 Max Pro. It's very efficient. I am probably consuming, I don't know exactly how many megabytes and gigabytes myself personally, but I'm probably contributing a sizable amount for an individual, probably not as much like I'm on my computer. Similarly, my computer is also interacting with data centers. Anytime you send an email, you do some computation, you stream a video service or whatever, use social media, it is all around us. It is omnipresent. And so it's unavoidable to escape interactions with data centers. And I understand people are conflating AI with the slop material you see on social media, videos, contorted and twisted imagery. And that is not all what AI does. And I think to the boom part, I think the boom can be done sustainably, where you're now starting to see, like I said, the president has put out a pledge asking developers, if they're going into the data center business, bring your own capacity, make sure that you're not passing down any costs accrued to the consumers, making sure you're following permitting reform. There have been some cases, unfortunately, it's like outlier stories I've heard in different areas, where the companies will come in, impose the project, behave very secretively. And knowing the American people, nobody likes to operate on the lens of secrecy. So if you're going into a community and you're operating very kind of deceptively, of course you're going to lose buy-in from the community. But I think a lot of these businesses are going in with good faith. You would hope that they would go in with good faith, promising jobs, promising, you know, long-term jobs, short-term jobs, things of that sort. And then also, I think the bigger picture is we do have to, you know, we have the most data centers of any country in the world. We have 45% of the global data center market. And we want to maintain that edge, and we can do it because of just the energy policies and environmental standards we have, like every American thing that we do. And I think we want to be optimistic, and I can field it back to you, Andrew, because I'm like riffing on about this and I want you to ask me more questions about this. But I think kind of wrapping in and encompassing all of this is it is interesting. It's a challenge. I think the middle road approach is great. A full out moratorium position, I think, is foolhardy because, you know, blocking progress, like that's not the American way. No. And being too protectionist never helps us in the long run. You can't isolate yourself from technology unless you're willing to become a Luddite living in Appalachia or somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. Most of these people cannot do that, Andrew. I'm not suggesting they come there. They don't have the endurance to survive in Appalachia.
Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at ProLonLife.com/begin.
Hey, a lot of these people. Putnam County, West Virginia is getting a hyperscale Google Center. But this is an infrastructure thing. Why is it getting that? Well, because there's a 756 kilowatt power line right there because there's a Toyota plant up the road. So it's like the fiber optic lines you're talking about. They looked at that power line and goes, okay, this is 90% of our infrastructure problem right here done. We can build it. We can fix everything else. Then you get into the, you know, water consolidation, all that. I want to talk about it as an infrastructure thing because I think we get in the bubble and we forget how we get here. If we had ignored the hippies and had nuclear in the 70s and 80s, you would have had more headroom in the power grid to have all this renewable stuff, and we'd be 20 years ahead of renewables right now because the grid, you would have had enough headroom to do the innovation that is needed. Part of the problem with renewables, I'm not against them, they can't innovate fast enough to get the demand that we need, and they can't keep up with them. If you would have done nuclear and more natural gas and all that and got off coal sooner, you would have had the headroom, and then you could have done it. That's neither here nor there. The problem is if you don't properly regulate and policy the data centers, but everybody still wants their free Gmail and everybody still wants their free Facebook and they want their free Instagram and they want their free Google Drive and they want to put, I just looked. I've got 8,000 some pictures on my phone right now. It's ridiculous, yeah. right? That's a lot of data.
That is.
And there's millions of us. That free data has to have data centers. So we're going to end up with the same problem where the next technology is going to get studded in its growth if you don't properly regulate this one, which has already been studded in its growth because our power grid is not adequate for the data future that we need. And I wish I had a good soundbite for that, but we never learned the lesson of like, no, we already doomed ourselves for the next 40 years because of how we handled the last 40 years. We need the entire picture of that. And data centers is just a great place to get into. It's like, oh my God, we need massively more electrical grids. And I'm like, we could have had them, but we didn't because reasons. And maybe we'll learn the lesson. I think we are slowly, but now everything's a trade-off. Now you're back into the nuclear argument because the downside of nuclear is the front-end cost is excessive, crippling for a lot of people, fairly so. And they're like, well, it's too hard. Yeah, that's why you have to do it ahead of time. So now you would have been on the back end of it.
But also, the problem also was with banking institutions. For the longest time, they said to invest in nuclear would be disastrous. Yeah. Now you start
fear-mongering.
Fear-mongering. So they bought into a lot of that scaremongering, fear-mongering too. So they were not helpful on the private side of things.
Yeah. And take nuclear out and put in data center, it's the exact same argument.
Yep.
I'm here and I'm old enough now where I've actually heard some of this. It's the same thing with the computers. It's the same, like it's computers in schools. Like I remember when they put computers in schools. I remember putting the little disk drive in and playing Oregon Trail. Like it's the same arguments. We just change the technology out and then we have the same argument again. If you take nuclear out of all those arguments and put in data center, all the same arguments work other than we're going to blow the world up.
It does. And I think this is just like a symptom of, I would say, people being afraid of technology or improvements. And I'm old enough too. I'm a little younger than you, but I'm not much younger than you. I'm now in my mid-30s where I remember the Y2K scare. I was 9 years old, 10 years old at the time. Yep. And they said the future is going to be ominous, you know, with the internet boom and it's going to be terrible. And look how much positive actually came out of that. There was no Y2K scare, so to speak. I mean, we had, unfortunately, 9/11, but that had nothing to do with, that was a terrorist attack. That had nothing to do with Y2K. But everyone's like, well, all these
and 6 years later, you have the iPhone and everything changed.
Yes. So, you know, Y2K, you know, technological advancements, then you had the smartphone, you had the iPad, you had so many technological advancements that came out of that. And that's where the cloud computation and the data center evolving came out of. And I think as people learn more and things become more demystified, and I was actually talking about this week at a speech in DC, offline conversations after I spoke, and I was talking to some stakeholders. I said, the data center companies do need better PR for sure. And then they also need to open their doors, however comfortable, if it's not top secret sensitive data that people would be exposing themselves to. The data centers have to open it up to, you know, stakeholders like me, media members who are fair and objective. And we could see for ourselves, like, what goes into it? Like, is it this like Wizard of Oz, you know, Emerald City behind the curtain type of thing? Or is it just like a big storage unit and you have people working there and it's like a lot of technical offices with lots of computers, lots of wires, lots of this, that, like, what is it? So I think they need to kind of open the curtain a bit more and maybe they will.
No, very fair.
They have to do that because.
And keep the CEOs off social media.
Yeah. Only those who are properly coached and trained can do that. But like I said, every interaction we have digitally is supported by a data center. And this goes also back to Andrew. That's why I see a lot of parallels with opposition to data centers, to natural gas opposition, nuclear opposition. There was a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by someone from the Huntsman family, the famous luminaries of Utah politics and philanthropy. And I don't know if it's the son or I believe it's a son or a nephew. I don't recall the relation, but I think he might be related to the former governor, John Huntsman Jr., who was the diplomat. Possibly the son of the patriarch who passed away and had all those philanthropic efforts. But he had said, they're coming for our data centers. And he laid out, it's the same kind of neo-Luddite behavior you saw in opposition to nuclear, natural gas and fracking in particular during the shale boom. And the same parallels, because you find the same opponents to these projects are opposing data centers. I've seen so many parallels, and I like to operate in trends and in observations and be like, okay, who's behind this? Like, is there some nefarious group behind this, a cause? Who is this? Or, you know, are these the same kind of bad faith actors who have scared people to not develop nuclear, to only go renewables? And for me, I'm more of a renewable skeptic than you, Andrew, because I want things to work efficiently. And I like nuclear, and nuclear is great because it's actually clean and it's renewable. Geothermal to me is like the best renewable resource. Iceland has a great handle on that. I wish we had more deposits here. We could hopefully become like
But you don't want the weather patterns.
No, for sure not. For sure not. But I saw what it did like with water too. Like they heat their water with geothermal power too. So it's amazing what they do with multiple purposes. But it comes down to this like energy question of, you know, energy. We create this and feed this dependency, but also people kind of forget that the electricity that we enjoy, this is where I was going with this. I lost my train of thought for a second, so I apologize. So people think certain items, services, and products that we enjoy very handsomely in the United States come out of thin air, like the wave of a magic wand, and you automatically have electricity. You automatically have your data. You automatically have your food. People don't know where their food comes from. They think the grocery store is the end stop for it. And they don't know that a lot of processing, rearing of cattle, rearing of chickens, vegetables and the like goes into this. So people think magically food just appears at the grocery store. There's nothing that goes beyond it. People think electricity, a fairy godmother waves her wand and you just all of a sudden turn on your outlets and boom, there's electricity. They don't know what goes into it. That raw energy is converted into electricity, largely natural gas, nuclear, coal, and the like. Some sources that are often vilified for being dirty or questionable or dangerous, which are actually giving us life. And then they also have a lot of those byproducts too. Coal and petroleum have lots of byproducts that people take for granted. Same with the data center stuff, electricity. So we have talked about this. People have to think kind of in that same lens about your food just doesn't come out of anywhere. Your electricity does not magically come out of anywhere. There's a process. Same with the data center. So I think because there is a knowledge gap as to how these sources originate or why these things are. And again, the industry has to do a better job of explaining this. Like they could have us explain this. That's great. But they don't pay us enough to do this or pay us at all to do this. I'm kidding. I would still explain it even without
a payment. Where's my check?
I would still do it gratis. Like I have no problem explaining things for free. I have a stable job and side projects, so I'm not worried about income. But I'm saying like they could deploy people like us who are articulate, understand things and help explain it. But they need to do a better job of explaining this that just does not come out of thin air. Something is backing up all of our digital activity. That is what data centers do because it cannot exist just in the figma of our imagination. It has to be stored somewhere. It's like every infrastructure project. Yes.
I want to end this here and I'll get you out of here on this one, but I really want to hit this point because you know me, I'm a conservationist. You know how much I love West Virginia and my mounds. If I could take three mounds in West Virginia and make them smoking pits of desolation for all eternity into the ground and get rid of all poverty, I would do it right now. No questions asked. That's not how this works.
No.
I am very sensitive, especially in places like West Virginia, where you have extraction industry history and those sorts. Mm-hmm. I get it. I know why people just reflexively like, well, what are we getting out of this? This is something else. We're not going to get any say. They've already. Yeah, I know the Google deal came in. It was predetermined. So when they have the hearings, they're not going to stop anything. I get all that. At the same time, I think we need to figure out how to have a balance of you've got to include people in the process.
Yes.
But you also can't stop progress at the same time. These things are going to get built somewhere. Get your piece of it. Get what you can get out of it. But the conservation part of it, I think, is important because it plays to the people. It's like good conservation is not zero growth because you're never going to get growth out of zero growth ever. Mm-hmm. We need Sarah for this because they did in Alaska. We're like, you can't do anything here. And then they're like, why don't we do anything here? It's like, because you can't do anything here. Conservation is not, we have to keep this pristine forever because that's not going to work. It's how do we use the resources and be good stewardship of the resources we have. So if Google comes in, now you need regulation to hold them to it. Don't take their word for it. But if they come in and say, we're going to have 120% water reclamation on our facility, and they have write your regulation for the data center that way. If you're going to give them a tax break, write in exactly what that tax break, what that money goes to. It's going to schools, it's going to roads, it has to go to roads within a 50-mile area, however you want to write it. Do the regulation due diligence to go along with what they're promising and then hold them to it. But just doing the Luddite, don't build anything thing, if you go with nothing, you're going to get nothing. So I get frustrated with that argument too. It's like, I understand people get exploited sometimes, but mm-hmm. you also can't just stop progress. How do we have a better conversation about that piece? Because that's really the heart of the data center thing, and whatever comes after data center and whatever comes after that, that's the heart of it.
I agree, Andrew. And I think it comes with, I see this with other projects. Some people will accuse it of greenwashing, but I think what the data centers have to do is, I bet you in the West Virginia area where a lot of these centers are popping up, you probably find some employees. I see this with energy, and this is not isolated to extractive industries or energy intensive industries and supported industries. But I bet you there is probably a data center worker or soon to be hired data center worker, West Virginia, Virginia, who goes hunting and fishing and can kind of break that norm and elucidate more on that not so paradoxical relationship where he can balance out his interests financially with also wanting to safeguard the environment. I see this with oil and gas. I see this with mining projects where you have representatives. I'm not sure if it's strategic, but if they're pulling from the community, most of the time, let's say I'm thinking of a mine in Idaho that is supposed to be coming online in the next few years, and they're planning to restore a watershed, a stream of the Salmon River that was previously decimated by legacy, I believe it was mining or something, some extractive industry. It was neglected. And this new mine is going to come in and say, okay, we want to help restore the watershed. This is not greenwashing. We have partnerships with the various different government agencies. And we are trying to have community buy-in because most of the people who work for us are from the surrounding local community. So with data centers, I feel like they can borrow the same tactic, or they probably organically have someone who is very outdoorsy, a conservationist, a birder, a hiker. You know, it's not unusual to find those types of people working at these infrastructure projects. So I bet you if they were listening and smart and watching our conversation right now, and I'll try to talk more about this in future panels or events that I might be doing in the near future, where bringing people who have that balanced approach and can kind of dip their toes into both worlds. They have a connection to nature, but they also have to support their livelihood. This exists. This is a very Americana thing where
that's the human story.
Human story.
Human history. That's the story.
It is. So I bet you, you know, if they're doing advertisements or video campaigns about like, this is a video project or this is, infrastructure project coming to the community, or maybe they're having town hall meetings and they want to get to know some representatives. I think, especially with environmental or conservation groups, you can have someone who's from the company who also represents your interest, partakes in these activities, who can help explain, like, here's the technology we're using to reduce our footprint meaningfully. Maybe they're going to be pledging to support, you know, some restoration of a watershed or a butterfly field or something of that nature. Because a lot of these companies, I think to Vogtle Nuclear Power Plant, they have done a lot to help restore some endangered tortoises. Nobody knows about this, but I was like, what is like some of the environmental buy-in that these companies have done? And I don't think it's greenwashing. I think because, like I said, they're part of the landscape. They want to be amenable to the community and want to help positively, you know, restore some nearby watersheds or nearby habitats and environments. So I had seen even like Vogtle Power Plant, the big nuclear plant. That was the last one that was just approved. It took forever. But they had done a lot and pledged and worked in concert with the federal government and different community organizations to restore this endangered tortoise, some other species, and it works out great. So a lot of these projects, if they want to get buy-in, if they want to get approval, they could do something like that if it's meaningful, not like a vulture-like behavior. Because I've heard this with wind and solar companies that they may throw gobs of money at like the Little League or something like that. So you got to kind of have to be suspicious. Like you want to make sure that those representatives are actually ascribing themselves to the community, learning more about the community, not just trying to buy and curry favors. Hopefully the data center folks don't follow that approach and they try to incorporate themselves into the community much better. Hopefully they take and hire from existing people in that area, whether it's West Virginia, Virginia, Texas, wherever they're having these projects pop up. And draw those connections. I think you can find that, like you said, it's the human condition where we're multifaceted. We can't be, you know, stuck on one extreme versus another. I like to build my, and it, you know, as someone who works in this, like I've always been multifaceted, you know, with answering these energy questions, conservation questions, because I've seen, to me, like the bigger picture, who is threatening both the industry side of things, but also these recreational. They don't just stop at industry, Andrew. We've talked about this at length. I feel like the radical preservationists, who are thankfully kind of a losing side issue, because now they're even starting to have to recalibrate and adjust to the modern times and retool themselves and their tactics and try to break bread with people who hunt and fish and are...
Because they got a fundraise on Twitter.
They got a fundraise on Twitter. So with how things are changing, you know, you see that. But I think people still operate in this lens of, okay, we're not stopping at industry. Industry, who cares? Our target is recreationists. And they will go after recreationists. I've seen parallels. I follow trends. You know me, Andrew. I'm very observant. I try not to put out anything that I'm not sure of or that I can't back myself up on. So anytime I have seen attacks on, let's say, oil and gas or coal, even nuclear, I go back and see, like, okay, what else are they also obstructing, a lot of these kind of proponents? Oh, I've seen attacks on hunting and fishing. So what's to stop them from even going there? And if they succeed there, what are they going to stop there? Like, make everything like a wild preserve that nobody can access, where I think there's extreme fringes on both sides. But I see more, sadly, on the kind of preservationist rewilding side of things, more extremist there. So to me, I've tried to bridge the gap between industry and recreation folks, and I have found a lot of common interests between both sides. And like I said, there's that overlap between people who work in different industries, extractive industries or not, who like to go hunting and fishing. In one of my recent talks in Pennsylvania, I met a lot of people who hunt and fish who say, like, I don't want to ruin the environment. I care much about it. And I want to help my industry work more in sync with true conservation efforts, be a good partner, making sure our activities are not going to ruin, you know, the surroundings, and making sure that we have good buy-in with the community. So there is, it's not an either or. I think that's a good takeaway and final thought parting that I have, but there are a lot of paradoxes that don't have to be paradoxes. And with how everything has improved, like with more abundance around, more technological improvement, we don't have to sacrifice first world living standards, hobbies, the like, to support our livelihoods, because as people have more disposable income, they can care about their environmental surroundings. If someone is struggling to make ends meet, they have always pulled time and time again. Nobody's going to want to pay more a month, a dollar a month, even very, very little segment of the population is willing to pay one more dollar a month to fight climate change. You find this recorded wherever you talk to, for instance. So when people have income and they're happy and they're set in their ways, they will have more time to pay attention to their natural surroundings, get more involved. And so again, this pitting of different interests against each other, especially in energy and conservation, I think does not have to happen anymore. I try to speak out against it. I try to talk about harmony, true harmony, not greenwashing, but actual meaningful conservation. And I think the same tactic applies to data centers. Like I said, sustainably built, balancing the boom and the doom. I love how you phrase that, and find ways to go about it more carefully and cautiously without falling behind on our competitive edge.
Yeah, good conservationism is always good for the environment. That's the easy way to do that. We started late, we kept her long, so I got to get her out of here. Gabriella Hoffman, the District of Conservation podcast is excellent. I never miss an episode of it. It's fantastic. IWF, you guys do great, great work, and you're all over the place doing other things. We will do more of this, my friend. We will get it to work properly next time.
Yes.
I will put all the links, including read this policy focus, because it actually does one thing I've seen nobody in media do. It actually breaks down the three different kinds of data centers, the hyperscales, yes, and the contingent and all that. You got to know that piece or you don't know what you're talking about on this, because right, they are not the same. So Gabriella Hoffman, my friend Gabby, I appreciate you so very much. Thank you for your time.
Likewise, Andrew, big admirer of yours, and I appreciate the opportunity. Let's do it again soon.
I'll DM you an eclair, I promise.